The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Brett Mears. Is hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Brett Mears does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
All right, pay-per-view week is upon us. Great to be with you. It is Sunday, February 6th, 2022. It's episode 335 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. Coming up on our seven-year anniversary. And Ken Flo is in high demand when it comes to Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Where are you right now? And let us hope that your Wi-Fi holds up.
I know, really. Right now, I am about, I guess, 3.5 hours north of Los Angeles. I'm in Three Rivers, California. And just absolutely beautiful here. I'm doing seminars here in Visalia, California, yesterday and today, and at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So thank you to those guys for having me.
Outstanding. So did you go back and forth, or have you been on the West Coast for a long time?
I was on the West Coast for a long time. All yeah, right. head back tomorrow. Yeah.
Excited to see your children, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Yes.
How old is your son now?
He's going to be 9 months, the middle of this month. And then my daughter's going to be 4 next week. So can't wait to be back. Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting because I'll go away for 14 days to Abu Dhabi and I cannot wait to see my kids. And right. Then there's this sort of running joke, if not reality, that like after like 15 minutes, it's like, all right, Jesus fucking Christ, get out of my face, get out of my hair. When's the next UFC live event? I got to get the fuck out of here. You know, there is nothing like the anticipation of seeing your children after being away for a long time,
yeah.
But it crystallizes pretty quickly how annoying they are. No, I'm just kidding. All right. UFC Fight Night, Hermanson versus Strickland. We're going to recap that. We have predictions coming up in the main event challenge for UFC 271. Ray Longo has not answered a single text message this morning. Anyone who listened to the show last week knows that he prefers primetime. So it remains to be seen as to whether or not he's going to answer the call today. But Ken Flo, let us start with the UFC Fight Night main event. And really is weird going from pay-per-view back to UFC Apex, man. You know, it sounds and feels anticlimactic to me. You know, I have to say that off the top without fans. It just feels weird. But Sean Strickland taking care of business over Jack Hermanson probably made it closer than he needed to, even though I don't agree with Sal D'Amato's 48-47 scorecard for Hermanson. But it goes into the books as a split decision win for Sean Strickland. His 6-fight win streak is a middleweight second longest active one in the division behind Israel Adesanya's 10. And he's a piece of shit with money, but you got to love him. Your thoughts on Sean Strickland?
You know, it's funny. When I was looking at the fight and I'm seeing these guys walk out and there is no crowd, I agree. It is very, very different. And I imagine it has to be very different for those fighters who are used to fighting in front of crowds and then kind of walking out to essentially silence, getting ready, having to stay focused throughout that process. Some guys really like competing with that crowd. And if you're one of those people, it's probably very challenging. Either way, I thought Strickland fought a pretty smart fight, did what he had to do to win that fight. Again, it was the jab of Strickland that really was the story here. Hermanson just looks awkward still on the feet. You know, once he started loosening up, I think he's so tight that it was hard for him to land shots and land without them being telegraphed. Like, he telegraphs a lot of his stuff, doesn't have the same speed as Strickland. That was clear. But yeah, I thought Strickland really had a very solid performance. It was funny that he was critical of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no obligation by any fighter to stand there and train.
Well, right.
Like, that actually would have helped Hermanson and would have hurt him at times. So, yeah, I thought it was a solid performance from Strickland, who continues, you know, to climb the rankings and look pretty sharp.
And I know you're the I finish fights guy and we have fun with that. But it's not as though you were not defensively sound or rooted in strategy. The Diego Nunes fight, obviously, you know, I thought you mitigated risk really well to make sure that you fought for the title in your next fight. But I think in a clear title eliminator, or maybe not so clear, but in a fight that was going to eliminate a middleweight title contender a week before the belt in this division is going to be on the line, and a week before Derek Brunson is going to fight Jared Cannonier, I think a finish for Sean Strickland would have been particularly useful, and I think that's why he was critical. But man, I love watching him fight. I love watching him jab. You know, I love when he starts to flap the gums a little bit. He didn't do a whole lot in this matchup. you know, like, I just think it you got to be careful with these judges. And I don't mean that necessarily, but leaving a fight up to the judges. I know a lot of fighters don't like when you say that, you know, but there was a time when Sean Strickland was a minus 5,000 favorite on the live betting line. And I certainly didn't think I was looking at a fight in which a guy was minus 5,000. But Hermanson, even when he was able to get the fight where he wanted to, I didn't think he did a whole lot with it. And yeah, I know he raised his hand after the fact, but yeah, it was 49-46 Strickland for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sal D'Amato, I don't know what he was watching. I was really surprised and very nervous as the third judge's scorecard was read. So really confused by that one. He got it wrong for sure. It was all Strickland pretty easily.
Yeah.
Maybe Hermanson, you know, had one of those rounds, but that was pretty much it. But yeah, listen, in regards to Strickland's performance, I see what you're saying. I see what Strickland was saying. Because, you know, I was talking with my buddy about this. You know, there's different tiers of fighters, right? And if you could put those guys in a tier one, a tier two, a tier three, you know, I think that if you're elite, you beat someone like a Hermanson. And that's no disrespect. Hermanson is tough as nails. He's physically tough. But there's not one thing where I'm like, hey, this guy is really good at this aspect. Or there's not one thing that, like, super stands out. And he's just well-rounded. So if you're elite, I think you got to go out there and finish to show that you're elite.
Yeah,
and like, right. Hey, I can absolutely win this belt. So yeah, I think that might've been a little disappointing for Strickland, but either way, he got out of there pretty clean. Didn't take a whole lot of damage in the process.
I was a little banged up watching the main event, but it did seem to be a quieter than normal crowd for the UFC Apex. Some of those Apex crowds are really loud. This one felt particularly quiet, even though the Nelk boys were in the building. I heard them say on the broadcast, I don't know if you heard this, that Sean Strickland does not run nor lift weights, that he just essentially spars and does live stuff. And hey, man, it ain't broken, but I thought that was a very interesting detail that I hadn't heard before. I didn't know if you had any thoughts on that.
I find that interesting. I'm not so surprised. I wouldn't be surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's 100% accurate, but I'm sure a large part of his training revolves around just sparring. And that's tough. You know, like, I want guys to be smart about it. And yes, you can get that kind of experience and get better doing that. But it's also a way where you cannot improve if you're just stuck doing the same thing over and over again. And, you know, you can argue that the best way to get better at your sport, to get conditioned for your sport, is to do your sport.
Right,
now,
right.
I think, you know, you can definitely get stronger doing other things and more explosive, more athletic mobility and stuff. Mobility drills would help. But I wonder how that would fare against, you know, the truly elite in that division.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. You know? Basketball is a great example of a sport that will test your conditioning and your cardio in a very different way, even if you're in good shape when it comes to your strength and conditioning. All right. Congratulations to Sean Strickland. He certainly set himself up for another big fight, either a main event, perhaps a title fight, depending on how things play out this weekend. Certainly for the middleweight contenders, Jared Cannonier, Derek Brunson, Sean Strickland, you want Adesanya to be decisive in victory over Robert Whittaker, because a 1-1 series between the two of them, given their star power, given the rivalry, that would probably lay a pretty good foundation for a trilogy. So I think there are going to be a lot of Adesanya fans this weekend near the top of that middleweight division. All right, co-main event, Nick Maximov over Punahele Soriano by split decision. He ties Marvin Vettori's single-fight middleweight record with 11 takedowns landed. Thought they were pretty generous with some of the scoring of those takedowns, because he didn't do a whole lot with some of them. But yeah, I thought Nick Maximov, you know, I thought he had some pretty good strikes at times as well. Punahele Soriano dealing with an injury towards the end of that fight. But anything for us on the co-main event and Nick Maximov staying undefeated?
Yeah, listen, I thought his pacing and his wrestling and consistency was a little underestimated here. I thought that, you know, his willingness to go out there and bring the fight in his realm was the difference. Soriano had some good spots, some good moments there. But Maximo's a really good grappler, man. I was really impressed.
Yeah, I was too. And Punahele Soriano, I think, is also a guy, excuse me, that's going to be heard from in the future as well. So we'll see how it goes for Nick Maximo. But, you know, I think the Nick Diaz Academy certainly has a fighter upon which to build there. And he's a pretty young guy, too. All right, Shavkat Rakhmonov, I know the broadcasters and Buffer were doing it two different ways. Either way, first fighter out of Kazakhstan to get to the UFC. We have since had several others, but he stays undefeated. All of them finishes. This one over pretty talented Carlston Harris, even though he is the lesser known quantity here. Spinning hook kick, 14th knockout in UFC history, stemming from a wheel kick of any kind. And very interesting fighter now in this welterweight division. I guess I would just say to you, you know, when, as commentators, like we're trying to build guys and build stars and next generation. And I have a hard time quantifying where this guy is relative to the welterweight elite right now. I don't think he's ranked, you know, he's undefeated. I think he's an intriguing prospect, but, you know, I just don't know how good he can be. I really don't.
Well, that's the thing, especially with a lot of guys, you know, earlier in their career, or if you're seeing them have a few wins in a row and they happen to be winning quickly, it's hard to know. And I think you only know by having those guys that kind of the middle tier guys in that division and seeing how they do. Those are usually the measuring sticks for me. It's like, did they beat them? How did they beat them? You know, how easy did it look for them? And I think those are typically better measuring tools than, you know, some of the fights that they take early on.
All right, Brendan Allen took a fight on 3 days' notice, and I know you didn't see this fight, but he defeated Sam Alvey with a rear naked choke. Nice little combination, hit him to the body, hit him with a check hook, avoided the counter coming back, and then obviously his offensive jiu-jitsu is outstanding, didn't even have hooks in, and really good with that rear naked choke. So for Brendan Allen, you know, the Chris Curtis chapter now goes further in the rearview mirror. There's an Alvey angle that I want to get to here, but I guess I'm just curious your thoughts overall on Brendan Allen, even though you didn't see the bulk of this fight, and how high you think his ceiling could be back at middleweight, where he is presumed to go after this short notice opportunity went his way.
This was one of those fights where you try to build your confidence back and start another win streak here against a guy who's been around the block for a long time, Sam Alvey. You know, maybe not the most well-rounded fighter per se, but very dangerous, you know, has a lot of power. And he went out there and did exactly what he needed to do out there. You know, for Brendan Allen, he's been a little inconsistent in his performances, even sometimes within his fights. He has a ton of potential. So I think this was a good performance for him to get him back on track, show that he can be consistent, and go out there and fight with not a whole lot of mistakes. Because Sam Alvey can be a very dangerous
guy. No doubt. Crazy to see Brendan Allen like dicking around on TikTok with his wife and then like the next day accepting a light heavyweight fight. But hey, he was in shape enough, certainly. And I don't know. I think he was in Florida training. I don't know if he had a fight on the books, but that's a big win for Brendan Allen. And I thought he did a pretty good job on the microphone as well, trying to position himself for a potential TV gig down the line. A couple more items here on UFC Fight Night before we get along to Ray Longo. Julian Erosa over Steven Peterson to kick off the main card. It goes to Erosa by split decision. Steven Peterson was not bonus eligible because he missed weight. And this has been hard for Peterson to consistently make featherweight. I'd like to see him move up to lightweight. I thought the fight could have gone either way. But some numbers on it. So Julian Erosa with 155 lands and Steven Peterson with 148. They combined for 303 significant strikes landed. Second most ever in a three-round featherweight fight, even though I guess it wasn't really a featherweight fight. But the record is Shane Burgos and Billy Q with 357 at UFC 268. And this is just feel-good stuff for me. And I do have to circle back to Sam Alvey in terms of not-so-feel-good stuff. But, dude, like Julian Erosa, right, has had three UFC stints. He's been all over the place, twice having to earn his way back to the UFC, a wealth of experience, taking short-notice opportunities left and right. And I had to find him on Instagram this morning and congratulate him because he made $100,000 in bonus money. And, you know, it's nights like this that I don't want to, I guess validate is too strong a verb, but it is nights like this that validate every ounce of blood, sweat, and tears that he's put into this sport. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just woke up really happy for Julian Erosa.
Oh, absolutely. And I heard the fight was absolutely nuts, by the way. Wow, awesome. I mean, I'm sorry I missed it. But yeah, my older brother hits me up. He's like, you got to see this fight. It's insane. I wasn't able to get back home in time. But anyways, heard it was crazy. And, you know, I think for a lot of fighters, you kind of forget, and for fans for that matter, you forget that you could be one fight away from absolutely changing your life. You know, one performance, you get the, you know, a couple bonuses, you know, you get a fight that puts you on the map and some sponsor decides to, you know, get you on board. I mean, there's so many different opportunities with just one fight, being there at the right time and having that right performance, sticking with that. And having that become, you know, the thing that kind of set you forward for a long winning streak. There's so many different factors, and believing in that process and going out there and never taking any fight for granted, any opportunity for granted, is huge. And to see Julian get that win and do it in that manner, I think he's going to learn a lot about himself, and that's going to propel him forward. You know, and definitely get him to be motivated and climb up those rankings, man. That division is nuts. But he does have a lot of potential to be a top featherweight.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of skills and a lot of experience. Any given Saturday night, I really do believe in him. All right. Cody just passed along this from Sean Strickland on Twitter. Here's a quote. I probably shouldn't say this, and no disrespect to Jack Hermanson. He's a warrior, but I feel like I didn't even try this fight. Like I was treating it like a low-level sparring match. Very disappointing. Let the pressure get to me. Won't happen again. So there's a lot to unpack there as we circle back a little bit. The pressure. I don't know if it was main event pressure or knowing that he's getting closer to that championship, which obviously could mean riches and changing his life forever. But I thought some interesting stuff there from Sean Strickland, because he didn't necessarily go for it when there were windows that he could have opened up a little bit, I thought.
Yeah, listen, I think that those kind of opportunities can kind of get in your head a little bit. I believe it was his first main event in the UFC, right? Is that right for Strickland?
I thought Uriah Hall was a main event. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right. Well,
either way, though.
Either way, you know, there was more on the line than there was in the Uriah Hall fight. So I think that for that, he probably felt it. You know, who knows where it's coming from? It could be coming from his own team. It could be coming from himself. It could be coming from the UFC. So, you know, there's a lot. And I think those are one of those things where you know, it could easily have gone the other way, and you have to learn from a loss. He was able to win, still learn from that and find out a little bit about himself. But, you know, I think there were times where if he was a little bit more reckless, or if he was going for it a little bit more, that would have favored Hermanson, in my opinion. Yeah. Could he have gone for the kill a little bit more? Could have he followed up on some of those shots? Sure, I agree. But I think overall, it was still a pretty solid performance from Strickland.
Yeah. I thought so, too. I'm excited to call one of his fights. I feel like I have not called one of his fights in a long time. So we talked about Julian Erosa, all the feel-good stuff. And then there's Sam Alvey, who I believe now has a seven-fight winless streak in the UFC. There have been a lot of split decisions, a draw in there against the very talented Daun Jung, some cancellations, short-notice fights, and other things that haven't necessarily gone his way. But it's hard to watch his video on Instagram where he's sort of on the verge of tears. I think he's fought almost 25 times in the UFC and really had a lot of shining moments, but it's a lot of fucking red on that Wikipedia page now, Ken Flo.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He says he's not done fighting. He's going to lean into his YouTube channel and coaching, but I don't know, man. I just kind of feel bad for the guy a little bit, you know, because it just has been some bad luck mixed with some difficult matchups, and this was a forgettable night for him for sure.
Sure. Yeah, I think Sam is a great guy. He's a fun guy. He's always smiling all the time. You see him bring his kids to the fight.
I remember
us calling fights and seeing him with his whole family there. You know, he's a family guy. He loves to fight. He's been around for a long time. He has been a guy that the UFC could lean on, not only to go out there and deliver action-packed fights, but also, you know, fight on short notice as well. You know, he was kind of a go-to guy for them for a little bit. Yep. You know, you see him, he's had success at 185 and 205, but he has had a lot of inconsistency and, of course, is on a long losing streak, unfortunately. So it's tough, man. You see a lot of these guys just pour their heart and soul into this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple bad fights or a couple bad matchups can set you down a really tough path, and building yourself back up and getting that confidence again, and not getting, you know, tough fights again. The sport is absolutely brutal,
it's ruthless,
and it's tough to see a nice guy like Sam Alvey so upset like that.
That's the thing. And you have personal relationships with these people. And we have commended his wife, who has turned into an excellent coach, named his son Ivel, by the way, after Gilbert Ivel. I mean, how do you not like that? But there is a lot of negativity that can permeate in the MMA space. And you see people say, like, dude, enough with this guy, like, get him out of here. You know, even my beloved executive producer, Cody Merrow, just wrote in our chat room. And Cody, I'm not trying to expose you here, but he wrote exactly what you say about the coworker who sucks at work, but you love working with. Like, how's David Carpentry? Eh, he's a good guy. Not much of a fucking carpenter, you know, but it's just it's an unforgiving business. And I hope that if this is the end of Sam Alvey's UFC career, that people can at least shine some positive on it. Yeah. We congratulate Alexis Davis, who just continues to get it fucking done. Big win for Hakeem Dawodu over Michael Trezano, 30-27 times three. Miles Johns on the wrong side of a comeback there on the featured prelim. And Chidi Njokuani, chitty fucking bang bang over Marc-Andre Barrio in 16 seconds. Anthony Njokuani obviously fought, I believe, around the same time that you did in the UFC or WEC. Maybe I'm mistaken on that. I don't know.
He did.
We used to drop that name, Anthony Njokuani, on MMA Live back in the day, actually. Yeah. But, you know, we've heard about his brother for a long time, and to come in and knock out a guy in 16 seconds like that, another highlight at UFC Fight Night, Strickland versus Hermanson. All right. Or Hermanson versus Strickland, I should say. All right, more on that coming up potentially if Ray Longo answers the call. But we are going to transition now to UFC 271. And we will start with the pronunciation of the week as we welcome on our executive producer, Cody Merrow, who probably doesn't have a Sam Alvey fight kit in his closet. Is that fair to say?
No. But I'm smiling, though. I mean, no?
You can, it's so funny, right? Like, cause you can be a little bit of a dick. Like, you're a super nice guy, but I do think that your New Hampshire comes out a little bit at times and you're absolutely ruthless. Our audience just knows you as this happy go lucky, congenial guy. And they haven't seen that side.
Well, now they do. You're exposing me. Look at the tire tracks on my back rolling that bus on over me.
Not us, John. We are kind, gentle folk who never says anything bad.
Yeah, except to Ray.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, of course.
I said to Cody, you know, before the show, I'm like, hey, man, you know, like, what can we do to, like, improve the turnaround time for getting the episode out to the masses? And he's like, fucking pay me more, motherfucker. You know, in high demand. I'm like, what? All right. I love you. Unreal. Lifeblood of the show, Cody. Fans, lifeblood of the UFC, you're the lifeblood of the Anakin Florian podcast. To that end, pronunciation of the week, because I don't want to keep Brian Petrie waiting too long. My man BP stepping in for Jimmy Krause this week. All right, so this guy fought Dan Hooker last year at UFC 266. He'll kick off the pay-per-view against Bobby Green this weekend. Cody, who am I talking about, brother?
So I believe you're speaking about Nasrat Haqparast.
God, you sound so good saying that. Let's hear him say it.
Nasrat Haqparast.
And again?
Nasrat Haqparast.
Don't need the slow one, do we?
Yeah, that's perfect.
I give it to him.
In the back. I mean, I'm all branded too. I mean, look at this. Like, I may as well have a friggin' Anakin Florian tattoo.
Hey,
you should get one
tattoo
on your neck.
Bet. Hey,
yeah.
All right. The first listener or viewer to get either the monogram on Cody's beanie or the Anakin Florian podcast logo tattooed on your body. At Anik Florian Pod, what do you want the prize to be? Because I'll pay good money for that. I'll get you on the program for sure. Get you a couple UFC tickets. You put that logo on your body.
Boom.
We'll get you a UFC pay-per-view. No doubt about it, cheer.
Love it.
All right. An epic NFL season comes to an end this Sunday, folks. And DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56, has a super offer for new customers. So how about this? Get 56-1 odds on either team. You bet just $5 or more, get $280 in free bets if your team wins. Of course, if betting on MMA is more your style, not a problem. DraftKings Sportsbook also has tons of ways to get in on the action for Saturday's big UFC 271 event in Houston. You can throw down on who will win each fight, how fights will finish, and so much more. Figures to be an absolutely incredible main event between Israel Adesanya and Robert Whittaker. So be sure you don't miss out. To that end, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use promo code John Anik, one word, J-O-N-A-N-I-K. You bet just $5 or more on either Super Bowl 56 team and get $280 in free bets if they win. That's promo code John Anik at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. 21 plus minimum age and location requirements vary by jurisdiction. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full list of requirements and state-specific responsible gaming resources. Void where prohibited. All right. We got picks to make. UFC 271 beckons. Let us get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Hey, hey.
There he is.
Hey.
Brian fucking Petrie. MMA Takes podcast. It's great to see you again.
Good to see
Where
you
are you in the United States of America right now?
Cincinnati, Ohio, baby. Right here. Bengals.
Are you a born and raised Cincinnati Bengals fan?
I grew up in the 90s, so I took a lot of shit for being a Bengals fan. My stepdad, he jumped ship. He was a Brett Favre guy. No. Not me. True blue. Cried when they beat the Raiders. Cried when they beat the Titans. Cried a little more when they went to the Super Bowl. And you guys usually in fucking hats. So I went out and got this bad boy. And now I'm the only hey, hat.
Looks great. Yeah, my head looked all shiny. I forgot the Travis Matthew hat today. But, bro, that's incredible. I am very excited for you and your fan base. I have a cousin who's a diehard Bengals fan with three little boys who are just out of their skin right now.
Yeah.
How do you think they're going to do? They're plus four right now.
I mean, listen, we've been underdogs. I mean, besides the Raiders, we've been underdogs the entire time. I mean, listen, the Rams embarrassed us last year in England. We played them in England. Taylor comes from the Rams. We have similar offenses. But, man, that defense is rising up. And we got Joe Burrow. We got Joe Scheisty. I mean, that guy can do anything. You know what I mean? He's I'm excited about the future. I mean, I've always been a very positive Bengals fan, even when people shit down our throats.
Yeah.
And this is just, I mean, I'm over the moon. I mean, I wish I could go out to LA, but I mean, the tickets are like $8,000. I mean, who are you kidding with that?
Right. So, I asked my cousin Ken Flo how much it would cost him to take him and his three boys to the Super Bowl, and he estimated $35,000. And
oh my God,
you know, you take out a loan or however you do it, right? Yeah. He's not going to do it, I don't believe, but it's tricky because I believe the last time your Cincinnati Bengals were in the Super Bowl was like 1988. Brian, you probably weren't even born then.
Yeah, I was two. I was born 1986, so I was two, but I don't remember it. I just remember Jeff Blake in the 90s. And Neil McDonald.
Number eight in your program, number one in your fucking house, right?
Long ball, baby. He's got the long ball.
It's tricky when your team makes a Super Bowl and you don't know when they're going to get back and you have children and you maybe want to create this.
Oh, I thought about it. I talked to my wife. I was like, let me just max out this credit card. Right. Let me go to LA. We'll figure it out when I get back. She's like, yeah, no, let's not do that. I was like, all right, that's probably better.
Well, and of course, it's got to be L.A. with this super fancy new stadium. When I went to the Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl, it was in Atlanta. People were sick of seeing the Pats in the game. It's the most I've ever paid for a sporting event ticket, $4,500. But I could drive home from Florida to Florida the nine hours. But I wanted to make sure that I got in the building for what I thought was going to be the last Brady Belichick Super Bowl. And indeed, it was. All right. Yeah. So I love your passion. That's why you earned a return trip back. But Ken Flo, this dude emails me yesterday bemoaning the fact that we're not making a pick on Kyler Phillips and Marcelo Rojo.
Kyler Phillips. That's my guy. I love Kyler Phillips, man. He's smooth.
So the reason we're not making the pick in some part is because we thought Longo was going to answer his phone today. But Rojo's 0-1 in the UFC. Neither guy is ranked. Certainly expected to be an all-action fight. It's on the pay-per-view for that reason. Usually, if neither guy's in the top 20, we don't necessarily make a pick.
I get it.
But
yeah,
I don't know. I think that you might be affecting future change on the Anik and Florian podcast. All right. First fight for us, the pay-per-view opener at lightweight. Bobby Green, -165. Nasrat Haqparast, +145. Haqparast, of course, coming off that aforementioned loss against Dan Hooker last September. He had some things going on in his life, perhaps bit off more than he could chew there, Brian. How do you handicap his chances here against Bobby King Green?
I don't know if I should whisper, but I don't want Vegas to know that. Why is Haqparast an underdog here? I don't get it. I think the ceiling's high for the kid. If you look at the Hooker fight, Hooker had to wrestle because he was getting teed up a little bit. Hooker did what he did. It's mixed martial arts. I get it. But Haqparast is really clean with the stand-up. His takedown defense is good. He's looked a little pedestrian at times against like a Rafi Garcia, where someone he should have probably steamrolled at the time. But he's a legit dude with really dynamite hands. Now, Bobby Green's coming off the biggest win in his UFC career. But not to besmirch Mr. King Green, that really wasn't Raging Ally Quinta. Let's be honest. I mean, Quinta, I don't know if he was there. One foot in, one foot out. This is a sport where obviously you can't do that. Nothing taken away from Green. He looked fantastic. But I see this fight being a real sweaty decision, all like Bobby Green's fights. You know, either side you're on, you're sweating it the fuck out. You're like, okay, what are the judges going to see in this one? Bobby does a shoulder roll. The one thing that Bobby does a lot of his fights, which I think hinders him, is he's very swagged out. So he does a shoulder roll and nope, you didn't get me. You didn't get me. But the judges are seeing it like, well, maybe he did get hit. His posturing's maybe hurting him a little bit, but I love watching it. But I think Nasrat just super undervalued at plus 148. I mean, I think I'm going to hammer this line at the dog. I think he's going to be a little faster than Bobby. I think his hands are cleaner. Wrestling, I don't think really is going to play a part in here. I mean, Bobby Green does have some chops, but I don't see that being here. I see Bobby Green, you know, kind of doing his thing in the third round, trying to pick it up. And I see Haprass just beating him to the punch everywhere he goes. Give me Haprass here at plus 148. Dog money. Dogs are barking. Yeah. I love it.
Kenny, I agree with a lot of that handicap. I mean, Green had a huge 2021. He had the memorable fight with Rafael Fiziev, and then, of course, the knockout of Ally Quinta in New York City. 18th UFC appearance for Bobby Green, trying to make it 5 wins in his last 7. How do you see it playing out, Ken Flo?
Yeah, listen, I thought Brian did a great job of breaking everything down. I think that, you know, Haprass certainly does have a lot of potential. I've heard a lot about him. I hear he's phenomenal in the training room. I've been kind of waiting for that to come to fruition during a fight. We've seen flashes of brilliance out of him, but I haven't seen that complete fight where like, yeah, this is the guy, you know. Bobby Green is on a run right now. I agree with the Ally Quinta assessment. I don't think that was Ally Quinta certainly at his best, but I do think that Bobby Green is getting more comfortable. I do think he's getting a little sharper every time we see him. And when I really break it down, I go, well, you know, the Fiziev fight, he could have won that fight. That was a close fight. Is Haprass as good as Fiziev? I don't know. And it doesn't always equal, you know, just because you did well against another guy that you're going to do well against so-and-so. But I do think that his experience at this point that he's accumulated is going to allow him to go out there and get the win here against Nasrat. I think there is value there in Nasrat being the underdog here. And I expect this to stay on the feet, but I still like Bobby Green here.
And just so you know, when I'm looking down, Ken Flo, I'm listening to every goddamn word out of your mouth. It's just that Ray Longo is fucking with me today. So I'm trying to sort of yes, gotcha. And things of that nature. All right. Featured bout in the middleweight division. I'm fascinated to see upon which side you gentlemen are going to fall. Two of the division's best, Jared Cannonier minus 180, Derek Brunson plus 155. And as I said or sort of hinted at off the top, they kind of had to like the way the main event went last night. Fairly dominant win for Sean Strickland, no finish, not necessarily the type of performance that gets you a title shot. I think the winner here is going to be in prime position depending on how the main event plays out. Ultimately, Brian Petrie, we need a winner. Cannonier the favorite or Brunson the dog?
Blonde Brunson. I mean, I love it. I love the whole revamping of his kind of image. He posts the picture where his shoulders are fucking 2 feet apart. I mean, I love it. I love me some Blonde Brunson. And more importantly than the hair, he's really kind of revamped his career. Early on, he was like kind of the wild striker who had power but didn't have much technique. And then he got clipped a little bit. His chin wasn't holding up in some of these fights. I mean, he's a fantastic fighter, but now he's going back to the wrestling. He's getting dirty. He's getting on top of you. He goes, my cardio's fucking better, and I'm heavy on top. He might not have the most finishes right now, but he's doing what he needs to do, and he was getting a little bit older in age. I think he's 37, 38. I mean, Cannonier is right up there with him, and I love this matchmaking. I fucking love it. Sean Strickland is a wild man. I'm really good friends with Chris Curtis. That's Chris Curtis's right-hand man, so I'm rooting for Sean Strickland there. But he left a little bit on the table last night for these guys to come in because Brunson has a little bit of history with Izzy, has a history with Whitaker if he wins, and Cannonier's the guy who he's fought Whitaker, he hasn't fought Izzy yet. But, you know, Cannonier's a guy who at 185 has one loss to Robert Whitaker but hasn't really fought a wrestler yet. You look at his 205 fights, you know, he fought Jan, who's a grappler, but he hasn't really fought anybody like Derek Brunson. And he's never fought anybody like fucking Blonde Brunson, I can tell you that right now. And those are two different guys.
Yeah.
And the whole narrative about 185 is Cannonier is the dark horse of the division. we need to stop talking about the dark horse. We need to start talking about the blonde horse, and that's Derek Brunson. And you're giving me plus 155. I'm taking another dog here. I see him winning a decision, and I just think Cannoneer's going to look good in the third round, kind of like what he does. But I just see the wrestling being too much. Too much. Give me Brunson.
All right, nicely done there with the breakdown. Ken Flo, a little backdrop for you. Jared Cannoneer, 37 years old, bounced back from what was a fairly major arm injury and ensuing surgery to outpoint Kelvin Gastelum over five rounds last August. On the other side, 20th UFC fight for Brunson. He's 38, and as Brian pointed out, largely untouchable since he lost to Israel Adesanya in New York City. That was November of 2018. Brunson, the dog here, going for a sixth consecutive win. Ken Flo, what do you think?
Oh, man. Well, listen, I have bet against Derek Brunson many times, and I've been wrong many times. You know, this is another tough one for me, though, because Cannoneer, I think looking as good as he did against a very tough Kelvin Gastelum, I thought was pretty impressive. And, you know, for me, he proved a lot in that fight. You know, Kelvin Gastelum does come from a wrestling background. He is a good grappler. He hits very hard. Like, not a lot of people can get by Kelvin Gastelum. Cannoneer, the fact that he was able to do it, impressed the hell out of me. But Derek Brunson continues to surprise and impress and get better. I like the change with his camps. He seems more disciplined. He seems more organized with everything he's doing. And he believes in whatever methodology he's a part of right now. So I don't know. I'm not going to make the same mistake again. Let's go with Derek Brunson here as well. I don't think it's going to be easy. Cannoneer can certainly end the fight against anybody in the 185-pound division. He hits so fucking hard. But let's go with Brunson here. I think if he can mix up the long-range weapons with his wrestling, he could steal some rounds and win this fight.
Very interesting to have you both land on Derek Brunson, because I have a sneaking suspicion that that Joe Osborne's going to have some Brunson action as well. So we will see where that number closes in the DraftKings Sportsbook this weekend. All right. Co-main event at heavyweight. Quick turn for both guys. Derek Lewis minus 190. Ty Tuivasa plus 160. So, Brian, Tuivasa following up that three-fight skid with a now four-fight winning streak, all of them by knockout, and that included what was just a vicious concussive stoppage of Augusto Sakai at UFC 269 last December. How do you handicap his chances now as he steps up against the Black Beast?
You know, I first, when this fight got announced, I'm like, man, it might be a little too quick for these guys, right? But I get it, because it's an H-Town. That's Derek Lewis's home. He's 2-1 in Houston, and Kenny might be able to address this more than I will. Fighting in your hometown, could that be an advantage? Could it be a disadvantage? I know when I was at UFC 77, Rich Franklin versus Anderson Silva, and Rich lost, the whole air, the whole U.S. Bank Arena just got, the air got taken out. It was, the drive home was horrible. But, you know, Derek Lewis, you know, likes these 2-1. You know, he's coming off the Ciryl Gane loss, which was in Houston. So maybe he, you know, he's chomping at the bit to get back there. He's fighting Tuivasa, who's hot right now. He's kind of revamped his career. He said, you know what? I'm going to be me. I'm going to focus on me. I'm going to bring in Justin Toffa. I'm going to bring in the big guys I want. But the camp's about me. And he's a young killer. People forget. He had that little bit of skid, and he kind of gets overshadowed with his fucking chewies, which I hope I don't see. Like, why do you got to spit in it? You know, just don't spit in it. And I'm okay. I'm cool. But fuck. But no, he's a fan favorite. He's a fun guy, and he can fight. I've really slept on Tuivasa most of his career. I picked Sakai against him, and that was on me. I actually, you know, had some money on Sakai as well. But, you know, Derek Lewis, after his fight with Chris Daukaus, who I'm really high on, he was patient. He was willing to sit there and patient. You know, Derek Lewis, you know, a lot of his fights, you know, he doesn't have the best chin, best body. He does get hit. Sometimes he fakes it. Sometimes he doesn't. But in there, he goes, listen, I'm going to hit this guy with power. This guy's not going to take me down. And let's see who can fall first. And he was so patient in there. His timing was great. And this fight's just speed versus power. Tuivasa is very, very fast. Derek Lewis is very, very powerful. I don't like 190 for Lewis because, you know, he has been clipped before. He's been taken down before. I understand why he's the favorite. I get it. But you know, I can't make the same mistake again. I can't pick against – I've picked against Lewis as well. I'm going to go Derek Lewis in Houston. Ty Tuivasa has been shaken before. You know, Greg Hardy buzzed him before he caught Greg Hardy. He's been knocked out before. And Derek Lewis can fucking knock out anybody. And it's not like Tuivasa is the most defensive fighter in the world. So
right.
Give me Derek Lewis.
That last knockout for Derek Lewis over Chris Daukaus in the main event December 18th of last year. His UFC record 13th knockout relatively quick turn here. He's the betting favorite at home. Kenny, I believe I said this to you prior to UFC 265, or I guess it would have been the show after, but Derek Lewis was kind of a defeated man when he walked into our fighter meeting. He was soliciting advice from Daniel Cormier about how to sort of handle the hometown and all the accompanying pressure. So I'm less surprised at the quick turn for Derek Lewis, more surprised that he is willingly competing in Houston yet again. Now, it's a three-round fight and not a five-rounder, which we know he prefers, but that hometown pressure ain't going away. And to me, I would factor that into my handicap. I'm calling the fight. I'm not giving a pick. I do see value on Tuivasa at plus 160. Ken Flo, who wins the co-main event?
Yeah, I guess that you can kind of group it in with pressure, but the other thing is hometown distractions. You know, having fought in Boston, you got everybody hitting you up, and you know, it's a whole different animal, in my opinion.
That was the meanest you ever were to us when you fucked.
I probably was. You know, so having said that, at least he has some experience having done it, you know, and I think that definitely helps.
Yeah.
Both of these guys are capable of winning this fight. These are two big heavyweights with big power. Tuivasa is perhaps the cleaner striker, right? He looks a little prettier when he's throwing his stuff, but he can get wild. And like Brian said, he's not the most defensively sound guy. Neither is Derek Lewis for that matter, you know. But if these guys are trading punches, I guess I got to bet on Derek Lewis. His power is, you know, very rare to see. I think if he clips Tuivasa, he can follow up and get the finish. This should be an exciting fight while it lasts. I'll go with Derek Lewis as well here.
All right. We'll see how it plays out.
By rolling Gogo Plata.
Right. Of course. Yes, exactly. I think you're going to see Tuivasa try to beat up that leg early and often. We'll see how it plays out. Fascinating matchup in the co-main event. All right. Main event. Israel Adesanya, minus 275. Robert Whittaker, plus 220 for the undisputed UFC middleweight championship. As you gentlemen know, Whittaker has reeled off three consecutive wins, two of them five-rounders against Darren Till and Kelvin Gastelum. Had a win over Jared Cannonier, sandwich between those two main event wins. First meeting between Adesanya and Whittaker, UFC 243, October of 2019. Whittaker opened the favorite. Adesanya, I believe, closed as a slight favorite. Two-plus years later, Whittaker has positioned himself for the rematch. Brian Petrie, who wins the middleweight championship Saturday night in Houston?
I mean, I'm an Izzy guy. I love me some Israel Adesanya. I think he is fantastic. I think he has all the recipe to eclipse Anderson Silva. And I know when people get sensitive of saying that because of what Anderson's done, but Adesanya is so fucking good. He's so polarizing. He's my guy. But goddamn, if I can't help but not like Bobby Knuckles. This guy is the sweetest guy in the world. He seems so honest and truthful. No one has a bad thing to say about him. When fighters lose fights, like the last time they fought, you know, a lot of, you know, fans and handicappers and some analysts, you know, maybe some of the things he's saying is bullshit, right? Maybe like, you know, maybe you just weren't ready because you weren't ready. But when Whitaker's talking about what happened the first time, I believe him. And I think it's right. You watch him fight. He didn't fight like himself. He was mad. He was angry. He wasn't on his toes and in and out like he normally is. He wasn't mixing it up. He was throwing huge looping shots, which obviously is going to feed right into Adesanya because he's so technical and so good. This is going to be a different fight, I think. I still lean Adesanya here because I think Adesanya is the cleaner guy. I've seen some pictures of him. He looks to be in fucking incredible shape. He's in America, I believe. He just landed according to his Instagram. And Whittaker's just going to need to mix things up here. He's going to need to be Bobby Knuckles. He's going to have to get hit. He's going to know that. He's going to have to eat some counters. He's going to have to be on his toes. He has to bounce in and out, straight punches, mix up with some takedowns. A lot of people are saying Jan laid the blueprint of Izzy. I don't know if that's true because they're different fighters. But also, if you really look at the Jan fight, that was a close fucking fight. The stand-up was very close. Jan's very herky-jerky, and Adesanya addressed how awkward it was. But, you know, he got laid on for the final two rounds and couldn't get up. I don't see Whittaker doing that, right? Whittaker's 13-1 as a middleweight. His last loss was to obviously Adesanya, and then 2014 to Stephen Thompson at 170, which is bonkers, right? Yeah. These are literally the best 185ers you got right now. I can watch these guys fight fucking 10 times, take my money. I'll pay it every single goddamn time. But when it comes down to the fight, I think Adesanya is just a little bit more cleaner. I know it's not a popular pick because Adesanya's getting a little heat, a little pushback from some people. That's kind of what happens. It's like the Michael Jordan effect. You know, either you love him or you hate him because he's so good. Adesanya's getting to that point where, you know, his personality is very big and over the top. So people are like, yeah, I don't like that guy, but he's got some fucking skills. You know, the Marvin Vettori fight was very impressive. You know, he didn't get him out of there. Marvin Vettori's got a block fucking head. Couldn't take him out, but he stopped the takedowns. His cardio was good. Whitaker, again, just going to have to mix things up, and I think Izzy's going to be ready for that. I think Izzy's one, if I'm going to nitpick, a lot of kickboxers when they come over, and I'm not going to say Izzy's a kickboxer, but they like to analyze a lot. They like to read, and by the time they know it, they're three rounds down because this is mixed martial arts. You're not looking for that perfect shot. You need to throw a little bit, and I think if Izzy, the first fight, he countered very well. I think this fight, he needs to engage a little bit more, throw some kicks, throw some, you know, stop that movement of Robert Whittaker. I like Izzy here. I like him by finish as well. My pick is Izzy. 275 doesn't scare me away. You know, it doesn't. I mean, it's a little high, obviously, because I think Whittaker, there's value on the dog here at plus 220. But
right.
I just think Izzy's the guy. You know, sometimes in handicapping, you got to pick the better fighter, the fighter that's going to win. I like Izzy by finish here.
Clearly, you've done your homework. If you want more from Brian, by the way, it's the MMA Takes podcast. So Ken Flo Adesanya undefeated in the weight class. He's actually the older man in this matchup, albeit slightly. Whitaker 31, Izzy 32. And Adesanya really doesn't like Whitaker, says he's not a good guy. We've certainly seen Adesanya produce greatness in the past when there is heat on the matchup. Since the first meeting between these two, Kenny, Adesanya has made successful defenses at middleweight against Yoel Romero, Paulo Costa, and Marvin Vettori. I don't know how much you think their first fight relates to what we'll see Saturday night, but ultimately, Kenny, you have got a lot of people to train jiu-jitsu today, so we need to get a main event prediction from you. So who do you like, Adesanya, Whitaker, too?
Yes, sir. You know, I think that for Whitaker, he has more ways to win in some ways, right? I expect him to probably rely more heavily on a grappling-based game plan for this one. I think that's where he has his best shot, right? That's no mystery. Can he do that? In order to do that, he has to deal with that long range and the long range weapons of Adesanya. No easy task. I think something that Whitaker does really well is that karate style blitz. We see it from Wonder Boy and other guys who come from that background. I don't think he can do that against someone like Adesanya. I think that would allow Adesanya to counter and counter with power. So him not being able to utilize that weapon, or I assume he's not going to utilize that weapon as much, is going to hurt him and throw him off a little bit. Not to say he can't use it at all, but he's not going to be able to use it as often. When you're crashing into high-level counter-strikers like Adesanya, that's when he takes advantage of you. That's what happened in the last fight. I assume he's going to have to mix that up and change that a little bit. When you take out a major weapon, a major tool out of your toolbox, that could throw you off. That can make you less patient. And Adesanya clearly trying to get him more emotional. It's like first thing Brian says, you know, about Whitaker is that he's a nice guy. I believe that to be true as well. Adesanya clearly going at like probably, you know, a weakness of Whitaker. It's like everyone knows he's a nice guy and he's basically trying to make Whitaker, you know, look like a punk, like he's a fake. That would certainly get someone emotional. And I think Adesanya is trying to get into his head. Will it work the second time around? I don't know. I think Whitaker learned from his mistake of being overly emotional. I think we're going to get a much better fight. While Whitaker can win this fight, will he win this fight? No, I'm going to go with Adesanya here. I think his counters, his range, his focus for this fight, he seems really ready to go here. I think he knows the challenge that Whitaker brings. And I think we're going to see a very sharp Adesanya because of it.
So in terms of Whitaker being a good guy, you know how they say sometimes you got to be careful when you meet your heroes. So Kenny and I called Robert Whitaker's UFC debut, the Ultimate Fighter Smashes on the Gold Coast in Australia, or I should say in Gold Coast, Australia. And he's always been one of my favorite fighters. You know, I remember his Twitter handle used to have like 1990 in it. You know, he was like such a young guy. And, but man, after one of his recent wins on Fight Island, it felt like at the bar, like he wanted to talk to anyone but me. So I was trying to get my Robert Whitaker time and he had had enough of John Anik that night. You can be sure. So I do think there is a little part of Robert Whitaker that's no nonsense and can be a little bit of a dick, you know, when confronted with a situation or a broadcaster they doesn't want to deal with. So I'll leave it at that. Brian Petrie from the MMA Takes podcast. Hey, man, if I'm not calling a UFC fighter, you're my first phone call. I appreciate your insight. I wish you Cincinnati Bengals all the best, and we'll catch up soon, my man.
Thank you very much. Thanks, guys.
Great job.
There is Brian Petrie with us for the main event challenge. And our final order of business, of course, will be the pick to click. Can you believe I got stoned by Robert Whitaker that night? I was so depressed. You know,
I got to hear the story.
There were more interesting people to talk to in the bar. And he said it in a respectful way, you know, but sort of
okay,
like,
okay.
What are you doing tonight, John, other than getting out of my face right now? All right, Pick to Click is presented by Oddshark.com, the most reliable source for sports betting information with the latest odds, insight, and analysis on everything UFC. I would strongly encourage you to check out Oddshark.com/UFC to get all you need to know before placing bets on the UFC 271 fights this weekend. The link for that is in the description of this podcast. The Oddshark Fight Center, a key resource for fans, and I know the media employs it as well. All the matchup information compartmentalized and presented in a nice, ingestible way. Oddshark.com also giving you a compilation of all the odds from various sportsbook opening prices, closing prices, and their experts are not only insightful, but they're not rookies in this MMA business. They've been invested in mixed martial arts and handicapping the sport for a long time. To that end, check it out in advance of the pay-per-view this weekend. Every click, of course, supports the Anik and Florian podcast. That is oddshark.com/UFC. Don't forget the second S. Let's get to the pick to click.
Time now for the pick to click. The pick to click.
All I have to do is bet on the winner, and I'll never lose.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
And with great pleasure, we say hello to my good friend. Like, if I got married this weekend, Joe Osborne's getting invited. You're goddamn right about that. Oddshark.com sports betting analyst extraordinaire, Joel Osborne. On Twitter, he is at JTFOZ. On Instagram, it's at Paper Chaser Joe. Happy Super Bowl week, Joe. How we doing?
John, if you're getting married on the weekend, I better be standing in your wedding. Goddamn it.
I know. I mean, you'd probably be a groomsman. You'd probably be a groomsman. I'm just thinking with like Ken Flo and Longo, like Cody's got to be a groomsman. I got two brothers, but you're definitely on the list for sure. All right, so let's get into it. Main event for UFC 271, Israel Adesanya versus Robert Whittaker, the second act. Adesanya, about a 3-1 or so favorite, depending on where you place your wagers. What do you think about the price? And ultimately, will you have a bet on the main event?
Yeah, my best bet for the fight is for this fight to go to decision. You can get that at plus 110. So it doesn't matter who wins as long as it does go to a decision. And I like this bet for a couple different reasons. I think we're going to see a much different approach from what Robert Whittaker this time around. I think it would be shocking if he came out with the same approach as last time. You know, he was very aggressive in that first fight, ended up walking into a lot of big strikes, which ultimately led to his demise. You take a look at some stats from that fight. He threw 116 strikes in 8 minutes and 33 seconds, only landed 27% of them while attempting zero takedowns. Now, that's not a recipe for success versus a guy like Israel Adesanya. So he went back and made some pretty big adjustments in the three fights following that loss. Most notably, he's mixing in the wrestling a lot more. 22 takedown attempts in the three fights since that loss, and as a result, he's been very successful. He's looked fantastic in those three fights. Now, that's pretty interesting, though, those 22 takedown attempts in those three fights. The reason why it is interesting, because the three fights leading into that first Adesanya fight, he had one total takedown attempt in those fights.
Wow.
So, ultimately, I think we're going to see a much different fight this time around. Whittaker's going to try to make it look dirty, try to land some takedowns. Hopefully, we see them tying up a lot, pressing up against your cages. As I always say, takedown attempts and takedowns themselves, that chews up a lot of clock.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see Whittaker be a lot more patient this time around. Adesanya is never in a big rush out there. And you just look at the fight logs for each of these guys. They've both been decision machines lately here. Whittaker, 5 of his last 6 fights have gone to decision, including 4 or 5 rounders. For Adesanya, 5 of his last 7, including 4 or 5 rounders. So I think we're in for a long fight here, guys, with the main event and a bit of a long shot bet that I like. I do think that Whittaker is a bit undervalued coming into this fight. So plus 220, if he ends up winning this fight, I think it will be by decision. So you can get that at plus 450. So I'm be making a little sprinkle on Whittaker,
yeah,
by decision, plus 450.
That's very interesting. And I do believe Robert Whittaker is a grappler at his core. He's a very good grappler. I mean, outstanding striker, but I believe he was a grappler first. So Derek Brunson and Jared Cannonier. If memory serves, Joe, you've made a lot of money on Derek Brunson. You've backed him, I think, in the Shabazian fight, if not others. He's plus 155 or so. I'm going to venture to say that that you might be on the Brunson side against Jared Cannonier. Is that accurate?
At 100%, going right back to the well. This is a value play. I think this line should be a lot closer to even. You know, Derek Brunson, for his first handful of fights in the UFC, probably looked at as a little bit of a gatekeeper, right? But that is not the case anymore. And we see athletes, no matter what the sport is, peak at different times. And that is very much what we're seeing here from Derek Brunson. You take a look at this 5-fight win streak that he's on, guys. He was closed as the underdog in each and every single one of those fights. So, you know, I love hopping on the value here, and he's looked fantastic in these fights too. Very well-rounded, great mix of striking and takedowns in the 5 fights, outlanded 4 of the 5 opponents, 19 total takedowns in that fight. So, you know, there's not a whole lot that I necessarily don't like about his opponent in this fight, but I love the number on him here at plus 155. I think that's great value once again. And the guy who is chronically undervalued, and you see these spots with fighters that just go on these incredible tears. You take a look at the current light heavyweight champion as an underdog. He's on one right now. The guy he beat was on an incredible run too as a betting underdog. So this looks like another situation where you just keep betting it until it loses.
Yeah, and Brunson is so willing to take on all comers, you know, fighting Shabazian when nobody wanted to, the Darren Till fight, and Cannonier's not a guy that I think people are dying to fight. So I got a lot of respect for Derek Brunson, and of course, all of our 3 handicappers and experts today like him at plus 155. All right, before we let you go, Super Bowl 56 coming up this weekend. Cincinnati Bengals plus 4 at the Los Angeles Rams minus 4. I'm totally overwhelmed with all the propositions, so I will just put it in your lap. What will be your wager or two on Super Bowl 56?
I'll give you 2 for the game. I'm on the Cincinnati Bengals here. I took them at plus 4.5, and hey, I'm totally biting on the Joe Burrow hype. It's absolutely real. This is a
You look like Joe Burrow a little bit. You're like a more handsome version of Joe Burrow.
I've been called the wish version of Sean McVay. Someone called me a couple weeks ago. So I just kind of had to shrug your shoulders at that, I guess. But this is a team that plays up to the competition. Since Joe Burrow joined the team, they've been a fantastic bet as an underdog. So in games that Burrow has played and started and finished, he got injured a couple times. They are 13-4-1 as the betting underdog. So this season, really playing up to the competition as an underdog of 3.5 or more, 5-0 against the spread. And a lot's going to be made, or a lot is already being made, of how poor this Bengals offensive line is going up against a pass rush with a lot of big names. But this Bengals offensive line sucking, that's nothing new. This isn't a new development. Right. This has been throughout the course of the season here. So I looked into some stats. So the Bengals have played 10 games this season versus a team that ranked in the top half of the league in QB pressure percentage. They went 8-2 straight up in those games. So this is nothing new. We're going to see Burrow get sacked a handful of times. Absolutely. But I also think we're going to see them put a couple of drives together and at least be able to keep this game close. So I like the Bengals there at current numbers 2 plus 4. Not a bad spot. Now, my favorite prop for the game, this is one to support the Rams, actually. It's Cooper Kupp. His longest reception is sitting there at 28.5. And I like the over on that quite a bit.
Yes, I do too.
He's topped that in 15 of 20 games this season, guys. So that's like not out of the ordinary for him to have a 30-yard reception. That's the norm, very much the norm. Right. And the Bengals are a team that gets burned a lot. The third most passing plays of 20-plus yards allowed. So I think Cooper Kupp, that's a pretty damn good spot for him. I like Jamar Chase to go over his receiving yard total of 79.5. Now, the counter to that for a lot of people will be, well, Jalen Ramsey. Take a look at some of the game logs for the Rams down the stretch here. The number one receiver on the other team has had a pretty good game going up against Jalen Ramsey. Yeah. So maybe he is a little bit overrated. We saw Mike Evans go off for over 100 versus them. Debo Samuel had a couple of good games. Justin Jefferson had a good game against them at the tail end of the regular season. So there's a whole lot to like, but those are a few that just really stand out to me for Super Bowl 56.
I love it. We're definitely aligned on the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm going to save all of my Super Bowl propositions for anecdotes later in the week, but very good insight from Joe Osborne as usual. And if you want more of it, why would you not? Oddshark.com and on social media at JTFOZ on Twitter and at Paper Chaser Joe, where he lets the comedy go a little bit. We really like that on Instagram. Brother, enjoy the Super Bowl. Thanks for checking in with us, and we will catch up with you before Covington and Masvidal in a few weeks, my man.
I look forward to it, guys. Thanks for having me. Good luck to yourself and good luck to all the listeners out there.
Thank you, brother. There he is, Joe Osborne. Yeah, equal parts Sean McVay and Joe Burrow. Ken Flo had some technical difficulties there. That's why we didn't bring him into that interview, for those of you who want to hear more Ken Flo. All right, that's going to do it for today. We might have some content from Ray Longo later in the week, but obviously he slept in today. And we did give him that option that if it was a late night, that he didn't have to answer the call. And needless to say, he did not. But we do thank our guests that showed up. They are Joe Osborne and Brian Petrie. If you did miss our sit-down with Vicente Luque or Max Griffin last week, those are both isolated on the YouTube channel as well. Don't forget Ken Flo's Jiu-Jitsu Essentials. Merchandise can be found at AnnaFloriumPodcast.com. And if you want the One More Sleep stuff, it can be found at Millions.co. Our executive producer is Cody Merrow. Stay locked to the channel for more content leading up to UFC 271 this week. And of course, if you're audio only, we appreciate every last one of you. With that, for Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Thank you for watching, for listening, for subscribing, for telling your mom and the rest of your friends. We'll talk to you next Monday, if not sooner. Yo fucking later.